like film? Do you like comedy? Do you like your childhood memories?
One more take?
Yeah.
Lewis and Pete's bad nostalgia film club.
Each episode sees comedian Lewis Charlesworth and Pete Phillipson revisit a classic childhood film through the eyes of an adult to see how messed up it truly is. Be it Back to the Future for its story of incest, Mrs. Doubtfire for its tale of the creepy cross-dressing father babysitter, or Home Alone with its sinister home invasion toddler torturer nightmare.
Bad nostalgia.
The Vintage Series.
Yo, 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 yo,
yo.
Hello.
Hello.
You're right, people. Oh, you're not the people.
I know, I'm not.
Got a bit confused.
I nearly responded to that one.
Oh, yeah, Q&A with Lewis and his listener, Pete, the co-host and the only audience member who's physically present here. Yeah, that would have been a really weird foot to get off on then, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. Right, should we start again?
Yeah, yeah, let's start again.
No, 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 no. We're not going to get through the show, are we?
No,
that's
we're not.
It. That's it. No, it's not. Right, keep listening. Okay, so this is Bad Nostalgia with me, Lewis Charlesworth.
And me, actor, writer, comedian, Lothario.
Oh, right. Okay, well.
Have you got no titles?
I
anymore,
set the precedent
mate?
With no titles, and you gave yourself loads of titles and bonus sex titles. So what's that all about?
That was
mate?
Even better. I was like, yes, he's had no titles.
You're not playing
gonna,
a fair game.
Mine are going to stand out so much more.
Well, right, Lewis, actor. I can't be asked for the rest. Right, good.
Playwright.
Playwright.
Yeah.
Comedian.
Yes.
Podcaster.
Tweeter.
Worker.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, welcome to the show. Don't worry, I'm going to get on with things. Today, we will be looking at and tearing up the one and only Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yes, mate, yes.
It's going to be a really good show. I mean, it's a very interesting film. We're not going to start just yet. It's still a bit of mindless preamble because I've got something. I've got some major news to talk to you guys about before we really start this show. Every week, at this point, what are we talking about, Pete?
We're talking about how much we miss our lovely producer, Michelle.
Exactly, and how inefficient and incompetent I am at running the desk.
Yeah, yeah.
All that kind of shit. Well, people, we're not going to do it this week.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Guess what? She is back! Yeah, Justin, can you cut that a bit? If you didn't get that, Michelle's back. That's what that was. She's back. She's back.
Yes.
I have been relieved from my duties on the desk, and the Michelle, the one and only Michelle, we've had various different interpretations of why she's been gone for so long, but one thing is definitely for sure is that we have been missing her, and we've been worried about her. But we found her. I found her in Yates's across the bar as
of
a cheeky pie of all the places. Hidden under the table, supping on a G&T, eating cheese and onion crisps, right?
Perfect, yeah.
That was a complete lie, wasn't it? But you were in Yates's.
I was in Yates's.
But only because I told you to come and join me. Yeah.
I thought you genuinely found her in Yates's. That's where you've been.
After all these months.
You've just been living in a
there
wine
is worse places. And she's back. Back. And you've been a bit nervous, haven't you? You've been a bit daunted.
I'm ready.
But you're back. And I won't ask you to elaborate too much about how it's been to come back because you haven't got a microphone. But I've got to say, it's beautiful to see you back there, sat in the chair, just manning the fort, being our mother figure as ever. We've been lost without her, haven't we, Pete?
Well, you have. I haven't really had to do anything at all.
Any impact on you whatsoever, has
not,
it, really?
Not at all. I mean, I'm glad. I mean,
you've had to change seats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, I mean, to all our listeners, if you thought Lewis was funny before, now he's going to be hilarious.
Well, don't do that.
Well, you are though, mate. You're not going to have all the shit to do on here, all the buttons to press. And
I know.
Everything. You can just focus on the funny.
I know what you're saying, but sometimes adversity brings the best out of you.
So that's
what I'm going to say to get the fucking expectations in check.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So we've got Bedknobs and Broomsticks. We're just going to say Michelle, we're very happy to see you, and this is you. Your return is beautiful, and we love you.
It's great to be back.
It's great to be back, and Pete, all the listeners out there, I've just got to tell you, we did play a little prank on Pete. We didn't tell him that she was going to be here, and we recorded his reaction when he saw her. We really got him. We got him big time.
It was a special moment.
Yeah, you looked a bit pissed off, actually.
Were
you
pissed off? Did I?
Yeah.
No, I was delighted.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, pissed off
that we caught it on camera.
Oh, right. Say.
Yeah, not pissed off the show as well.
Okay. Don't ruin the whole thing, mate.
Right. Oh, actually, before we start as well, sorry, guys. God, I'm really trying the patience now. But I've just got to say something, right? Bit of a plug, semi-plug. We're on Podomatic, we're on iTunes. 20 hours worth of material now. Get listening, people. But we've had people... I like to acknowledge when people from far and field have been listening to the show. Yeah. We had 9 downloads from Uganda.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What episode?
Last episode.
The last episode?
Uganda.
Really?
Yes. What was the last episode?
Chitty Bang Bang. Yes. Is that big in Uganda?
Chitty. I'm going to stop. I always do
that. I could see you were going there, mate.
As soon as I said the word Uganda, I thought, this is going to be hilarious. And then I thought, actually, no, stop. You're not Nigel. Stop.
Yeah.
Right, so, fresh. Brexit now. Right, so we're gonna kick things off, obviously, now. 15 minutes in, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
We're gonna start doing the nostalgia stuff for the lovely film, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And as we like to do now, this bed music is taken from the film Bedknobs and Broomsticks. How about that? Right? Tailored.
Very clever, mate.
Very clever indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you remember?
I remember very, very vague memories of this one. I remember always watching it on rainy days.
How interesting.
I know.
That's the first time we brought the weather into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what? That must be significant.
Yeah. I mean, either I watched it on rainy days or there was one rainy day where I watched it.
And it was memorable.
And it was very memorable.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that because you were desperate to get outside but you couldn't because it was raining so you had to keep watching this film?
Yeah, yeah. I think that might have been it. And yeah. I think it was me and my sister... Like a lot of films, it was just us two watching it, and I remember the football match in it as well because I was really into football at the time.
Okay. How old were you?
I was really young with this one. Probably 6 or 7.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Me too. I've not seen it since I was a toddler. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's one of them like Pinocchio where I don't actually have any memories of it. And even when I'm watching it, if something looks familiar, it only looks familiar in a really abstract kind of way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, no specific memories are coming back to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the only things I remember were... I knew Angela Lansbury was in it. I couldn't remember anyone else being in it. I knew there was some child of sort in it. Yeah. And I didn't even remember the bed, to be honest, even though it's on the front cover in all the images. What the fuck?
In the title.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah! Thought it was a metaphor. I just remember Andrew Lansbury, and I remember the animation football match. That is the only thing I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember any of the World War II stuff. Andrew Lansbury and an animation football match. I remember the animation football, which was the highlight, and there was a lot of dirge around the animation. That's what my feelings were at the time. Yeah. That's all I can remember whatsoever.
I remember as well, because she was in Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that when you were 6, when you first watched Six?
I was shortly after, because that was always on in the day, wasn't it?
You used to watch Murder, She Wrote when you were 6?
No, I didn't.
How bleak was it in Lincoln?
Give me more stuff about death!
Pete, you can't count to 10.
No,
yes, I can! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, death!
I think our babysitter used to watch it, or it was like a programme my mum used to watch, but I remember Murder, She Wrote used to come on, and me and my sister always used to point at the TV and go... Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, right. Like, that's what you're...
Because I was still, like a lot of other films, I was still at that age where I thought that it was impossible for an actor to be in anything else because it was so special to me.
Right.
So I thought, that actress, Angela Lansbury, she just belongs in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
She was the Bedknobs woman.
That's so weird that she's in something else.
Right, almost as though she was, like, moonlighting as a private investigator while she wasn't travelling on a bed in post-war Britain. Right, OK, that's interesting. What a bizarre mind. Good. Right, OK, well, this has been lovely. I mean, my nostalgia's limited for this film. I'm
Mine
all
is.
Out already.
I am, but it came back to me a lot of it. It was very trippy.
And
but,
it deserves its place in the series, to be fair, this
absolutely,
film.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
I don't know, it's kind of a cult classic. A lot of people, more people than you realise, have watched this film, and it was a big part of their childhood.
Yeah.
And as a child, I would have put it in the same vein as, like, Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, even though, obviously, we're not here to rate how good these films are. It's not in the same league in that respect, but I definitely would think of them in the same vein.
Yeah, definitely.
Same era, same kind of impact it has on you as a kid.
Yeah.
So it definitely deserves to be in this series, and I've got to say, as an adult going back to it, it deserves being in the series because it's so fucking weird.
Oh my god. Yeah.
But I think
it's a cult film for a reason.
Yes.
Because it could never have the sort of mass broad appeal that, like, Mary Poppins does, because it's so fucked up.
It asks a lot of the person who watches it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
To go with this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of charm and
we're
stuff
blowing,
going
we're blowing
in
a load here, mate.
Chitty Bang Bang and Mary Poppins,
yeah.
But this one it asks you to go the extra mile.
It does.
But
yeah,
sorry, we're blowing our load.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's listen to the trailer and then let's get to the nitty grit, all right? Thank you, Michelle.
She do that, because she's a witch. That's the sort of thing witches do.
Sound the advance!
Substitutionary history.
With Laguna, Mercury's and Satan's
feet. Here she comes, in the most enchanting role of her career.
You're not suggesting that I should take these children into my house.
Exactly.
The incomparable Angela Lansbury. As Miss Eglantine Price, the apprentice witch, who's taking a correspondence course in witchcraft. Funny man David Tomlinson as the lovable London con man.
Please note the name, ladies and gentlemen, Professor Emilius Brown. I am here to divert, to amuse, and yes, even to help you.
In Walt Disney Productions' super magical motion picture, Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
I like you better, Andrew Rabbit, Charlie.
Together, they lead three homeless Cockney waifs.
They take us to the island of Naboombo.
Through a world of magic, more fantastic than anything you've ever seen before.
Wicked witch.
Of course I'm not.
See?
You see, the work I'm doing is so important to the war effort.
Find up the story of the old brigades. Find the story of this place to place. Who's standing firm in our own front yard? The soldiers of the old home guard. That's who!
Parella Road, Parella Road, it's street where the anything and everything a chap can unload is sold off the barrow in Portobello Road.
It's lovely bobbing along through the water where we get along swimmingly. Bobbing along, singing a song on the bottom of the beautiful briny, shimmery shine.
Hello and back, and that was a lovely, big, beefy, chunky, long trailer that we had for you. And that's what we like to do now, because I used to like to give myself a break after the first section so I can get back to my desk.
Yeah.
But now we don't really need to do that.
I don't think we even need to do a synopsis, mate. I think that's...
We just played them the film, really,
didn't we?
Well, you say that, but you're just trying to get out of it, aren't you, Pete? Because you know it's your turn this week to do the synopsis.
Is it my turn to do the synopsis?
You know it's your turn to do the synopsis, Pete.
The admin part of the show.
You always get the hardest ones, don't
you? Okay. So,
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Okay, yeah, it's
just,
fine.
Just get into it, then.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, the film... So, during... So, it's 1940, World War II, and there's three young Cockney children that have been sent to... I think it's a place in Wales, it's meant to be. They've been evacuated there because bombs are being dropped on London. And they get to stay with this woman called Mrs. Price. She very reluctantly takes them into her own home. And it turns out Mrs. Price is actually a witch. She's practicing witchcraft, and she's got a broom, and she's casting spells in her basement. And she's quite strict with the kids at the start. She's, you know, because, you know, she sees them as a bit of a burden. So what the kids see her on her broomstick, and they find out she's a witch, and obviously she's practicing all these spells and being a witch in secret, so they blackmail her and say, you know, we're going to tell everyone that you're a witch unless you, do some things for us, you know, take us on an adventure or whatever, I think.
Yeah, something like that,
yeah.
Pretty much. Blackmail.
Yeah, blackmail, essentially. Yeah. To show them that, you know, what an amazing witch she is, she takes them on this, you know, and to get out of them blackmailing her, she takes them on a magic bed, which sort of travels all over the place. It goes to London, it goes to a place in Nabubu or something like that, where she gets this magic spell that she brings back to England in a bid to sort of end World War II, if you like. And now I'm out. That is it. I think what I did there, I started off all right, but then I was like, fuck it.
It was...
I was like, I'm wrapping it up now.
It was a hodgepodge of a lot of detail and a lot of cutting of corners.
Yeah.
It was, but it was fine, and you did the job.
Did I?
You did the job.
Yeah.
It was fine, mate. And it wasn't an easy job, because it's all over the place as a film.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very odd. It's very out there.
Yeah.
Every film we've done in the series has been out there, but this one is particularly out there, given the real historical context they bring into it. No, fuck it. Right. It's just weird. Yeah, I mean, we're not here to rate the film in terms of the merit of
it,
but I was just, I found this hard work, to be honest.
Yeah,
I was
just
like, what? What?
Yeah.
Dirge. But no, it's going to be interesting, and thank you very much for that, Pete.
No worries.
So we've done this nostalgia now, so let's tear it a new bottom hole. Good. Thank you again for the synopsis, Pete. That's admirable. So, yeah, given what Pete's just been talking about, we like to start, obviously, with the opening frame, We like to start at the start. With a lot of these films, there isn't really... The title sequence is incorporated with lots of action from the characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's usually how these Disney films start. But with this one, it starts with, like, a proper animated montage of a medieval collage of lots of imagery.
It's a Bayeux tapestry.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Thank you.
From the Norman invasion of England, which is a great way to start a kids' film.
Yeah.
With something nice and rapey and pillagey and murdery.
It is so full on, isn't it?
Yeah. But they've made change it to us as well, because it's they've made changes to it, because it's the Norman invasion of England, so 11th century, but There's Nazis firing guns.
So I couldn't work out whether it was just a history of Britain in wartime, or it was trying to give you a loose synopsis of the film, but with it being so early in the beginning of the film, there's no context.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to make sense of it.
Because I couldn't remember anything from the film. I was watching it going, what the fuck has this got to do with bed knobs?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
What the fuck?
Where's the flying bed?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because it's like kind of animation, and then you've got like bits of Nazis without any context. I'm like, what, is this some sort of kiddie interpretation of Mein Kampf? What is this? Where am I? Where's the context?
And there's a like it all starts off. There's all these kings and queens and trumpets, and it's like, and then there's a witch and a fish with legs, and a man that's like half chicken and a pigeon, and then Satan's there. And there's a cauldron, and then this Gregorian chant start, and it goes like really, really dark, like it's got no place in a kids' film whatsoever.
Yeah,
and then you've got the Nazis firing guns at a witch who's on a broom that's flying that's got the Union Jack on it, and I just don't know. I'm like, what is this?
Stop. Just pause.
What is this? Yeah.
Right, okay. And then we get into the film, and then it's like, oh, World War II. I thought, oh, fuck. I didn't know this was World War II is the backdrop. For
yeah,
the film.
Yeah.
Okay.
The kids' film.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's go. Saving Private Ryan. Okay. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get into it, and then they've got these poor kids. And in this series so far, there's been a running theme of feral children, and it seems to be every film we do like tops the last one for how feral and bleak and existential this scenario the kids are in with their lives and everything. They're orphans, right? Aren't they?
Yeah.
And but they're miserable. One of them is like a kleptomaniac. The other one is just like tries to blackmail her all the time. And there's a girl who's like so happy she must be in denial because she's so fucked up or has such an awful life. And it's like, then they're obviously evacuee children from London, like proper, oh, Cockney.
Yeah.
And then they go off to Wales and someone tries to palm them off to someone and says, I'm sorry, but you have got 6 bedrooms, so can you take these children in, please? And
she says,
no. Like, right, okay. And then she turns to Angela Lansbury and says, can you take them in? And Angela's like, well, no, because I don't like children. Like, well, given the fact that if you turn them away, they're probably going to die.
Yeah.
Because they'll have to move back to London.
Yeah.
It's not really a good justification for it, is it? I just don't get on with them, so can you just die instead, please?
It's awful, because you've got these kids that are, like, fleeing the home, the hometown, because, like, the Nazis are just, like, dropping bombs on London. And the woman, you know, who's meant to take them in, who's meant to care for them, Angela Lansbury's character, makes it perfectly clear to them that they're an absolute burden. And then they move in with her, and they find out this woman that is meant to be taking care of them is a fucking witch. But the thing
who
is...
Who hates them.
Yeah, but the thing is, the kids, even though they don't know that, they're such little shits, they don't even care. They've been evacuated from London, they've still got the name tags on them, and they're pissing about in, like, the museum with all the swords and everything. Yeah. They don't give a shit, and they're like, well, we'll just fucking go back to London, won't we?
They just take the 6...
They don't care. They're psychopaths. They belong in, like, Snatch or something.
They take everything completely for granted.
And the older one, he's so sceptical about everything.
He's like an EastEnders fucking extra, isn't he?
From
the 80s.
You could, like, nothing makes him happy at all. If you handed him a chocolate bar, he'd be like, oh... What kind of chocolate bar's that?
Yeah.
Like, everything. He's an ungrateful little shit.
Really,
I hope he gets a bomb dropped on him. Yeah, sorry.
And why is the character arc for the lead adult in all of these films that we've done so far, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Mary Poppins and this one, why is the character arc always, oh, I hate children, but by the end of it, I like children? I mean, what message are they trying to send out to the kids who are watching this?
Were kids just little shits back then?
I don't know what it is.
Worse? Did all the like adults have something to overcome? Was it trying to teach them?
I don't know what it is, but it's always like that. And it's like the message they're trying to say is something like, so adults are fuck ups, but if you go on a magical journey with them and defeat evil, they might end up liking you a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then we get to her house. She's obviously forced to take them in, because in the end she's like, well, I don't like them. And then she says, well, you'll be thrown in jail unless you take them in. All right, okay, I'll take them in.
So
they go into her house. And then she's got this weird, and I think it's got a lot of metaphorical significance. I don't know if you saw this, but she takes them to bed and she kind of does all the kind of domestic things for them, puts them to bed, feeds them and everything. And as soon as they go to sleep, she sneaks out, she goes downstairs, she goes into the cellar, she gets out her broomstick, and then she reads all this kind of guide and instructions on how to use the broomstick and how to do all her naughty, disturbing, creepy, culty behaviour that she likes to do in her private secret life. And then he finds out, the little lad, and then he tries to blackmail her, and he says, we know what you are. We're going to tell everyone about what you are unless you sort us out and take us on some trips and give us some food. And he even says this at one point. He says, do you know what? It'd be all right if we just saw the occasional sausage on the table. Doesn't he?
I saw that.
What's this thinly veiled metaphor? It's a metaphor for secret lesbianism.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Wow.
She's in the closet, and he's going to out her unless she puts a sausage on the table. And then she takes them out. And then obviously all this stuff happens. And then she obviously ends up kind of denying who she really is. She drops the witch stuff, synonymous with lesbianism, feminism, whatever you want to say. I'm not conflating the two things. You can be feminist and straight. What the fuck am I getting into now? And then she ends up becoming this kind of nuclear mother, doesn't she, at the end? And
yeah,
she denies
yeah.
who she actually is in favour of the nuclear family.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like anti-feminist.
It is. Yeah. It's just like the suffragette, isn't it, in Mary Poppins?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so, mate.
Yeah.
Very much. Anyway, sorry, I skipped right ahead. Let's get back, rewind a bit.
Yeah. I did.
Did you see anything like that? Any dodgy stuff about the way they treated Angela?
Yeah, well, I just thought it was so unrealistic. Like, kids just don't behave like that at all, and it just makes the film so much bleaker. The way when he finds out that she's a witch, he's like, right, you fucking slag, I want sausages on the table, and I tell you what, I'm not washing myself anymore either. Right, and give me a tenner so I can go down the boozer. Like, kids just don't, like, were kids
I
really
I love your interpretation
London?
Of that kid, I really like your impression.
That's exactly what he's
it's
like.
It's a real skill you've got that, mate, that's fantastic. Do you want to, like, present the show next time as that person?
Classically trained.
Classically trained,
yeah, mate,
right?
I will.
Yeah.
You can do the synopsis.
Yes, I will do. So then he tries to blackmail her, and then she's like, well, I'm going to take you on a trip. Let's go and meet the guy who taught me how to become a witch then, shall we?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she finds out it's the guy who's in Mary Poppins, and he's a disappointment because he's just a con man.
Yeah.
He conned her the whole time. I didn't fully understand that.
But his spells do work.
But his spells accidentally work.
Yeah.
But he was a con man when he did it at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not here to talk about why the film doesn't make sense, but it really doesn't make sense.
No, not one bit. And then you've got the Portobello Road sequence, which I've never seen before.
Mate.
Did you see that
yeah.
bit? Because I
yeah.
think it's only in the director's cut.
Is it?
Yeah. Can you explain to the people at home what the Portobello Road sequence was? Which, to be fair, was my favourite sequence of the whole film, but what the fuck was going on with that?
Is it... Basically, they go to London. They go to Portobello Road in London, and they all sing a song about it. And it's done to sort of, is it just meant to show how multicultural London is and how wonderful it is?
Well, I think it's more of a Commonwealth thing. It's like an empire thing, isn't it?
Right.
Because you've got the Pakistani section of the army,
which turn up in turbans doing like this sort of
Bhangra dance,
sort of R&B Bhangra dance. And then you've got the
then you've got the Caribbeans.
The Caribbeans on the steel drums.
Obviously, on the steel drums, obviously. Oh, yeah. Mate, you come back to mine. I get the steel drum every time. That's all I do.
Visit Lewis in Ramsbottom, right?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
outside his house every morning with steel drums.
I'm either protecting the Empire or playing my fucking drum, mate. I tell you, every time. And then you've got,
then you've
the Scottish.
Yeah.
The Scottish
and the bagpipes.
And the bagpipes.
And the bagpipes. And the American swing dancers.
Yeah, the American swing dancers.
The thing is, at the time, like, it was a lot of people probably saw it as a really positive thing. So it's saying,
it's very celebratory, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so...
But what's it celebratory of?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. And also, it's so, like, culturally, like, patronising because of so... It's just
celebratory
so,
of the military and of the British Empire. And this is, like, way after the British Empire's, like, pretty much collapsed. In the late 60s, you know, it's all imploding around this time. We're all giving our ship the shit that wasn't ours in the first place. They're giving it back, you know. And then this is, like, a reaction against that, saying, no, fuck you, we still got the Pakistanis doing the Bhangra dancing for us on the streets of London.
I completely didn't see it like that, but...
yeah. It's holding on to this idea of empire.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I saw it as such a positive thing.
No, mate, sinister. Remember what the show is.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe let's have a little segue and then talk about the latter half of the film where things really get a bit intense. Let's do it.
Bad nostalgia.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
Here we are, children. Come and get your lollipops.
We'll ruin your childhood.
I do believe, Pete, you've got a special little surprise up your sleeve for today. It's your turn to do the old song is fucked up, isn't it?
Yes, it is, mate, yeah.
Before you start, actually, can I just say, I've really been enjoying the song is fucked up so far in this series. Every time we do it, it seems to be a lovely little highlight, and it's really coming into its own, wouldn't you agree?
No, absolutely, mate, yeah. Especially after your Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, thank you, mate, thank you. Well, my friend said she absolutely adored your your Mary Poppins, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, big fan of it.
What a lovely circle jerk this is.
Yeah. Should we do it off air?
Yeah.
Let's do it off air. Should we not be self-indulgent and try and actually perform some form of entertainment?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so, do it, sorry.
So I'm going to talk about the song The Age of Not Believing. Now, the oldest kid in the film, Charlie, he refuses to believe that Mrs. Price can take everyone on this magical journey on a bed and time travelling and go everywhere in
as you would.
Yeah, as you would, yeah. But the other kids don't, because they're really young. And Angela Lansbury, Mrs. Price, she says to the kid, it's because you're at the age of not believing. And it's a really fucked up song to have in a kid's film, because this song is all about the loss of innocence and when you realise that Santa Claus and magic isn't real, and you start to doubt sort of, you know, all the stuff you've known as a kid. It's really, really messed up. You realise that life just isn't a fairy tale.
And it isn't magical.
And it isn't magical, and you've got to be your own person now, and like all these things that you thought were real actually aren't. And it is nonsense, and it's a horrible, really, it's a really bleak thing to have in a kid's film.
And it's a bit fucking rich coming from someone who's a witch who flies on a floating bed to a magical animation world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Why's she going around telling people that magic doesn't exist? It fucking does in this world.
I know. But when she was a kid, it didn't exist either, and this is what her dad used to sing to her.
Right.
Right,
so should we hit the music for This Song Is Fucked Up?
Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up.
Right, okay, so Pete, so give it to us.
Okay, so it's quite a short one, mate.
That's fine.
Basically, it's like I say, the song is about the loss of innocence, and it's about growing up and trying to be your own person and letting go of all these childhood dreams, which, whether they're real or not, you know, they do, you know, make you happy. And when you take away the music and just read the lyrics to the song, you're just left with what is just essentially like a therapy session. It's like a psychiatrist's analysis of someone who's having like a crisis, basically. Seriously. So, like, I'll
like
just,
about the meaning of life or something.
Yeah. It's just like an analysis that a therapist would give you.
Right.
Seriously. So if you read some of these lyrics, I've added my own bits. So it's I've put some of the lyrics in as well. It's like, so Charlie, you've mentioned that you've been rushing around in hopeless circles, searching everywhere for something true. Well, what I want to do is prescribe you with 50 milligrams of sertraline, which can be taken on a daily basis. Won't necessarily make you feel better. It'll just make you, you know, not care. And also, you said that you've been setting aside your childhood heroes. Well, to be honest, I think you only really had childhood heroes because, as a child, your parents didn't really love you. And as for your dreams being lost upon a shelf, I want you to imagine that shelf isn't even there, because neither are your dreams. They're very, very unrealistic things. Also, you mentioned that you feel like a castaway on a barren island in a lonely sea. That doesn't get any better. To be honest, the older you get, the worse things get. So really, this age of not believing is quite a good thing. It's sort of a mental appetizer preparing you for the real tragedies that will happen in your life. That'll be £60.
Wow, nice, Pete. Really nice.
Yeah.
Lovely, another angle there.
Yeah.
Nice.
It really is. If you read the lyrics, it's honestly it's like a therapy session. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's
beautiful.
Really bleak.
I love it. I love your interpretation. Right, okay then, Michelle, can we hear the actual song, please?
When you rush around in hopeless circles, searching everywhere for something true, you're at the age of not believing, when all the make-believe is through.
That's Charlie to a T.
When you set aside your childhood heroes and your dreams are lost upon a shelf, you're at the age of not believing, and worst of all, you doubt yourself.
Throw that into the wastebasket.
You're a castaway where no one hears you, on a barren isle in a lonely sea.
What's that supposed to be, poetry?
Where did all the happy endings go? Where can all the good times be?
Everyone on the bed, who's going?
You must face the age of not believing, doubting everything you ever knew.
the knob, Paul.
Until at last you start believing there's something wonderful in you.
The knob, Paul.
Like that. There's lots of weird, inappropriate innuendos in this film, right? Sausages, yeah. Knobs, beds.
I really don't...
What's that, though? The bed. The bed is its form of time travel. Like, you've got a TARDIS, you've got a car in Back to the Future, and a bed in Bed, Knobs and Broomsticks, where the whole nuclear family gets in bed, turns the knob, and then goes in time and space.
I just can't get over that song, mate. Like, it's... The song is called The Age of Not Believing, and she says you have to conquer the age of not believing and find something wonderful and true in yourself and stop believing in all these fairy tales. But before that, let's get on a bed and go to the island of Naboo Boom.
Exactly, like, what? Yeah, exactly. How can you square those two things? And he's only about 10 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck she wanting to do? Become an accountant?
Yeah.
Let him have a bit of a childhood. He's an orphan. He's living in North Wales. There's nothing else to do but fucking read a book and imagine. Right, that's actually a really good point. So we've had the Portobello Road sequence, just getting back to the chronology of the film. We've just had that.
Yeah.
And then that's when the violence and the threat... starts to kind of circle them a bit in the form, weirdly, of Bruce Forsyth.
Yeah.
He turns up with a knife.
Yeah.
And a scary, even more sinister chin as well. And
he's still 70.
Still 70 even then. Years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 70 years old.
I never realised as well, because I thought he was like such a charming, like, entertainer. Like, oh, it's Bruce Forsyth. Look at me, big chin and me, big nose.
Oh, yeah.
Even with the same expression, the same, oh, Bruce Forsyth charm, just put a knife in his hand, and he's so creepy.
It's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Picture Bruce Forsyth doing the same, like, oh, but just holding a knife.
Yeah.
He's a psychopath.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, if you had your kids and you made them watch it now, they couldn't watch that and then go and watch Celebrity Come Dancing. It wouldn't be the same kind of thing, would it? Put you off. It was gay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it's a weird cameo, because he's there and he's gone again. But it's just like, was that
still,
Bruce Forsyth?
Was he still famous back then?
I can only imagine not. I think the Generation Game came like a couple of decades later when he was a mere 87. Right. we've got we get towards the final act of the film, which is when we get back, and we've got a lot of war.
We've got the island of Naboo.
That's a good point. The island of Naboo.
Before that. It all came flooding back to me when I saw this.
Yeah, that's the only bit I remembered. When they get to the cartoon world and then they play that weird game of football that lasts about half an hour.
Yeah.
Has no impact on the rest of the film.
No. And the game, the football match itself, it's almost like displaying the horrors of trying to survive in the animal kingdom.
Yes.
It's like you've got a kangaroo getting kicked in the balls. You've got like an ostrich getting its neck snapped. You've got a cheetah getting its tail maimed. By like this fucking like alligator.
Yeah. They put all the animals' characteristics realistically, but then into a game of football.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they wanted all these animals killing each other, but you know, to make it a bit lighter, like they threw in just a football match as well.
It's like that thing like with Who Framed Roger Rabbit. If you mix live action with cartoon, you can't have cartoon violence because it's happening to real people.
Yeah,
so the violence isn't quite comedic. It's actually quite sinister. Like, this is actually hurting people.
Yeah,
stop
doing
it. And I just... You know how the story is effectively about they're trying to get this spell so they can stop the war? That's effectively the story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it just kind of sit a bit badly with you when they're trying to go off and... basically stop World War II, hundreds of people are dying like every minute, and then they go off on a tangent to just sing bobbing along, bobbing along, and it's like, actually, people are, do you want to just get on with the plot? You've got a realistic chance of ending World War II and you're singing bobbing along for at least 20 minutes. We've just lost 20,000 we've just lost 10% of Iceland whilst you've been singing bobbing along. Can we just stop? I only know that fact because of the year 2016, sorry.
And also, why aren't they dead under the water?
Yeah. Because the
Why
fish
are
the still
lungs not exploding when they're singing bobbing along.
Because when the fish start singing, they're like blah 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 blah,
yeah.
blah 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 blah, and like, what's going on, guys? Can someone be consistent?
Yeah.
Or are we dead? Okay, and then we've got the football game, and then they all start coming back, and then I don't know. I'm skipping ahead. Did you have anything else before we get to the final act?
No, mate. I think the final act is, you know, there's an Edinburgh show in that. If I'm honest, it's just
juice.
Yeah,
serious juice, man.
It really is.
Because what happens? It turns into this weird kind of home invasion straw dogs film meets Saving Private Ryan.
Meets Poltergeist.
Meets Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of scary things all being thrown into the mix there, because you've got the Nazis come aboard England, which is just a terrifying nightmare kind of thing, scenario. Yeah.
But when they first go into her house, they say, oh, this isn't a proper invasion, it's just to spread a bit of mischief.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It's a skirmish to see how easy it is.
Like, yeah, yeah. All right. But you're still Nazis and you want to kill us, and you are on the opposite side and a threat to us. Yeah, but it's just a laugh, isn't it, mate?
But so many really violent things happen in this final act, isn't it? Because everything really kicks off, and then just random acts of violence happen. That's not even the main part of the violence, which is the war between the Nazis. There's a bit where the guy who's on our side, the con man with the mustache, he tries to strangle the cat because it almost gives his game away. There's another bit when they try and force the smallest boy through some metal bars through the window to escape.
Yeah.
And he clearly would have died if they tried to do that. There's all these little bits of violence.
He one-bombs like two Nazis at the train station.
Does he?
He just twats them and hits them both, and they fall on the train tracks as well.
There's just all this war going on. And then what happens with the final battle? Right, that's what I don't understand, right? She's finally got all the powers, hasn't she? And rather than just using that magic has a lot of flexibility there. She just conjures up all these of her own army to fight the Nazis. But I'm like, well, why don't you just use your magic to find a positive way of ending it?
Yeah.
Why don't you just make them all, like, suck each other off? Or just give them all circumcised foreskins? Yeah. That would really hit the Nazis where it hurts. Do you know what I mean? Why don't you do something positive?
Or why don't you get actual real soldiers? Because the soldiers she gets, like, just... they just, like, poke the Nazis, like, with sticks. And they somehow just... and they end up just running off. Like, the Nazis are, like... trying to like stab them in the throat, and they're firing guns at them, and these guys that like she's kept, these just suits of armor with nobody in them are like just doing absolutely fuck all.
Do you not find that was another celebration of British Empire and British military history as well? Because she resurrects all these suits from different ages of British armies. This has got medieval armour, and then you've got kind of the Empire colonial suits, and then you've got World War II suits. So it's just like this collage of all these different types of British army resurrected from the dead and then fighting the Nazis. It's just like this really weird Empire colonial celebration. Imperialistic celebration. And then when the Nazis fuck off, they all kind of deflate, and it goes on and on, doesn't it?
It's horrible, that bit, isn't it?
Because it's like mimicking all the people who've fallen over the centuries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like, what are we watching here? Yeah. What is this?
And really, at the end of it, nothing's changed, does it?
Nothing.
It's still 1940. There's still 5 years of the war left. All that's changed is like...
That's a good point.
Yeah. All that's changed is like there's some, you know, medieval armour from a museum that's now just fucked. Now got dents in it. That's the only thing that's happened.
This film's definitely been this series, Willow, in terms of how bleak it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, what can you do with it?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. But leads us nicely on to our film trivia time after this little segue, people.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like, but just try to stay out of my way. Just try.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Will ruin your childhood.
Right, okay, people. Thank you for listening. Do keep listening. Do keep following us. Right, we've got a Facebook group. We're on Podomatic. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter. We've got our own YouTube channel, and we do this every week, and we live in houses. Come and visit us. Right, so I've given you about 10 different options. So you need to do something. Don't just be passive. Get up. Right, you don't even need to get up. Pick up your phone. Look us up. At Bad Nostalge. Tweet us. Follow us, be with us, join the community, send us little tweets, send us little suggestions. God, if they don't do that, I'll be fucking disappointed. I want, like, some Ugandan writing on my on my Twitter profile. I want someone... I don't even want to be able to read it. I just want a response. Good. I've enjoyed this more than I thought I would, Pete. It's been a hard one. We've been scraping the barrel.
They're always harder, the sort of, the more bleak, like, culty ones, aren't they? I mean, I don't want to say Willow.
Right,
but
I know.
I mean, well, no, that's unfair.
That is unfair.
That's unfair.
It's doing us over by comparing it to Willow, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah.
Relatively, it's this series as Willow, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not in the same league of just catastrophe as the Willow episode was. not at all. It's not been a catastrophe.
No, it hasn't.
Just the film is very bleak and similar in tone, isn't it? So it can be easy to get bogged down in an existential angst.
Yeah.
And it's one people don't know as well.
Yeah, yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
Things if your song is fucked up, people are like, yeah, what the fuck is that song?
Oh, is that what they're going to be like?
No.
Pour my heart and soul into that, mate.
No, what you did with it was absolutely brilliant. No, it was. It was. Sorry. God, what am I doing? Why are we giving ourselves, like, an editorial before the fucking episode's finished? It's been a great episode.
It's been a great episode, mate.
And we've been loving seeing Michelle get back.
Yeah.
She's been awesome. Oh, you've shot your load, though, already with the trivia you were just saying, haven't you?
I've got... There is actually one thing...
Oh, have you?
Yeah. When she...
We need to play film trivia.
I know.
Sorry.
Film trivia time.
Sorry about that, Pete. You got a bit angry with it, didn't you? Sorry about that. Sorry.
I don't know. I didn't. I've got one bit of trivia.
All right.
When Charlie finds out she's a witch, so the oldest kid finds out that Mrs. Price is a witch, he goes, "Well, all right, go on then, do a bit of magic." And
you should have seen his head wobble then. It was so good. It really complimented the impression. Sorry, Karen.
And so she does a spell, and she's meant to turn him into a toad, but she turns him into a rabbit. And then her character goes, "Oh, I can never turn them into a toad. It's always a white rabbit. I can never manage toads." And you think, and there's a theory, because you think, like, well, how many, you know, kids has she actually tried that on before? How many people has she actually, you know, tried to turn, like, into a toad? But she's got a different animal. So there's actually a theory that the cat is actually a kid that she tried to turn into a toad, but he ended up being a cat. And I've just made that up.
Good bit of trivia there. Good bit of truth. Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pete. No, it was a good point. I liked it. Because it did make me think that in a back garden, she's got like 100 rabbits and it's like a whole primary school or something.
Yeah.
I like that. It's got nothing to do with trivia, but I like it.
It's just a point I forgot to mention.
It's a good point, mate.
Yeah,
you've been using lots of trivia anyway, enhancing the show with your trivia.
I know.
Yeah. I've got a few points here, right? So, Angela Lansbury hated the acting in the film because of all the special effects. She thought it made all the acting very wooden and it hindered everybody's performances. So she wasn't fond of the film for that reason, apparently. Yeah. And then also, Angela Lansbury and a lot of the other main parts in the film, they're of the age for World War II, the real World War II. They would have been adults during that. And apparently her and a lot of the lead roles actually left England during the outbreak of the war avoid it. So they were like conscientious objectors. They fucked off to the US to avoid taking part in the war at all. So it's a bit rich that they came back to play acting of taking part in the war with magical spells when it came to it. They were actually conscientious objectors fucking off, trying to pursue their selfish Hollywood careers.
You weren't there, man.
Is that a quote from the film?
No, that's like a generic Vietnam thing that people from Vietnam...
Yeah.
So it's in no way related, and it's a different war.
I really went through the whole film then, thinking, what bit does that happen in? Is that... What? Is that Bruce Forsyth? No.
Oh, you weren't there.
Man. Yeah. I like that.
It's where your neck just went, man.
They can't see my neck there. They can't see it. Right, and my final bit was I think there's maybe room for this to be a part of one of the format sections in future series.
Ooh.
I always go on something. Well, if I'm really scraping the barrel for something, I always go on this website called commonsensemedia.org. Do you ever go on that?
No, I don't.
What it is really, really lame parents who have kids and they want to vet the films before their children watch these films to see how inappropriate. Have you been on this, Michelle?
No, but I'm
are you aware of that kind of shit?
IMDb has one.
Oh, has it? Yeah, when it tells you, don't watch this because 5 minutes in, someone says the word bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like that. It's really over the top. You can just imagine these people with their houses and their really ordered lives and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, they'll talk about how inappropriate these children's films are. And they've got all these different sections like we do have in Bad Nostalgia. It's like a very watered down version of Bad Nostalgia. It's like Bad Nostalgia, but without all the dick jokes, basically.
Oh my God.
I know, God, can you imagine that? It's the highlight of the show. Thank you, Michelle.
All right, Michelle.
Look at her.
Back 5 minutes.
Look at that. Right, so yeah, so they're going about it. And I looked up Bedknobs and Broomstick on this commonsensemedia.org because I was scraping the barrel. And they talk about it and they give it all these ratings like nudity, 2 out of 10, and all this kind of stuff. And I picked up one quote that I really liked. All right, so I'll just read it to you. Because I think it highlights why it's a bit fucked up at the end. They go, the climax of this film involves a very drawn-out battle between the main character and the Nazis. Despite the apparent violence, no blood is shed, no one is hurt, and the main character retains a smile throughout the entire battle. I think they missed the point there. That's actually quite disturbing. Angela Lansbury on a broom. Oh, bloodshed, a big smile! Your kids are fine to watch this. New certificate. I've got a smile on my face. So maybe that could. We've got room for that to be a part of the feature.
Definitely.
Part of the show. So the people who do listen, give us your feedback if you like that kind of stuff. Maybe we can incorporate it further down the line. But yes, I've been enjoying this. We're going to have a final segue and then we're going to have a little summary, people. So see you soon.
I want some more.
What?
Please, sir. I want some more.
We'll ruin your childhood.
We certainly will flipping ruin your childhood. Right, Pete.
Yes, mate.
Sorry, I just had
We're
to burp.
We're doing the ratings.
There. We're doing the ratings now, aren't we?
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
So, out of five...
Yeah.
How have you found the horror in this film?
The horror. I'm going to give it a 4, mate.
Going to give it a 4, yeah, because it's a bit full on the horror, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's Nazis. It's a kids' film and there's Nazis.
Yeah, and a lot of war.
Yeah, yeah.
War is a predominant theme.
Yeah, and a lot of knobs.
And a lot of knobs.
On beds.
With brooms.
Yeah.
Good. Violence.
Well, I think it's pretty much as violent as a kid's film can get.
Yeah.
There's a scene in it where a Nazi tries to bayonet, like, I mean, it is just a suit of armour, but he tries to bayonet.
It's just the intent there.
Yeah, yeah.
It may intent. Be air, but he tried to stab the air.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And also, bobbing along, when they sing that, 20,000 young soldiers die, so...
Yeah.
It's about as violent as it gets, 5.
Yeah, 5.
Right, I think we might have a season winner here, to be honest. Sex out of 5, mate.
Sex out of 5. Nice.
Not much sex.
No, I don't think there
it's
is.
It's a time travel bed, and there's a message. There's mention of knob and sausage. So for that, I'm going to give it a 2.
Right, I'm going to give it a 1, mate. Okay. I think the extra point is just in your head.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. By that logic, if someone's just eating a sausage, oh my God.
Yeah.
5 out of 5. morality. That's a new aspect we've got to it now, Michelle. Morality. Morality. Yeah. What do you reckon?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3. We've got a lot of anti-feminism kind of running through the undercurrents there. Mm. And any racial bonus points? We forgot to do this recently, but one of our lovely listeners, what's he called? Your mate?
Daniel Holt. Danny Holt.
Yeah. Give him a shout out.
Yeah, yeah.
He's earned a shout out. And
I think he's listening live tonight. Styled.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I was messaging him today. Do you know what he did today? He listened to Willow.
Did he?
That's what he did today.
Why did he
yeah.
do that?
He listens to all of them.
We
he
do
really,
talk about
really
Willow a lot,
show.
To be honest.
And that's why he listened to it.
Given that we don't
we
want anyone...
We need to shut up about it.
Given that we don't want people to listen to it, we keep talking about it.
He said
it.
He still thought it was really good.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, he's such a diehard, isn't he? He's great.
I know.
Well, he's going to love it even more, because we spent the last half an hour talking about him.
Yeah.
Right, so, racial bonus points. I don't think there's much in there.
I think the Portobello Road bit...
Big time.
Yeah, yeah.
Big time. And that is a big sequence.
Yeah.
And you've also got that Welsh woman and her accent, which is all over the place. It's really disrespectful of the Welsh people, I want to say.
Yeah.
Right.
As well, just for how obvious it is with the stereotypes, I think it's so obvious it's racist.
It
I mean, back then in the 70s, people would have been watching, you know, the Asian guys in the turbans doing that dancing, and the Afro-Caribbean on the steel drums, and they would have just been like, well, that's what they're like, isn't it?
That's what the coffee colour's like, Diddo. That's what they would have said. I was quoting my granny then. That's fine.
What? What did you just say?
That's what the coffee colour's like, Diddo.
I can't even.
Bet you can't, mate. You can't get me to say that three times. We'll be shut down.
Lewis is black. Can we just?
Yeah,
Lewis is black.
Point it out to our new Ugandan listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
I am actually.
Look at the bad nostalgia poster.
Yeah, look at the poster.
Yeah,
Uganda, I am with you.
Oh,
that doesn't
stop.
Help. That doesn't help.
Just stop it.
That doesn't help the cause, does it?
No.
Look at the poster. Right. Just look at the
we should
poster.
Get that as a sound effect every time you say something racist.
Yeah, that is so true. Who would be saying it? Just
you
someone
do it.
In the style
of... You should do it in the Ugandan accent.
No, that's not going to help. I should do it in the style of Barack Obama or something.
Okay, like, go on then.
Proper icon of racial harmony.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't do it. Right, so...
That just sounds Ugandan.
Right, so I'm going to give it racial two. Okay, so
I'm
going to
give it three.
11... 14, 16. Always the best part when they listen to do is it. When they listen to us do mental arithmetic.
17.
16.
Oh.
It's the leader so far.
Yeah,
the
mate.
Series. Third episode, fourth series in. It feels good, doesn't it?
Yes, mate.
And you know what? It feels particularly good because we got that lady. She's back
she's
with
back.
Us. Back with, from her voyage. From
yeah.
From her illnesses from and her AWOL and her everything.
From Yates's Wine Lodge.
When Yates's Wine Lodge.
She's come across the road.
Big time. Sat under the table, drinking a G&T.
Yeah.
Head and face full of cheese and onion crisps. Walkers. Didn't happen. I was just there propping up the bar. Right, so thank you very much. Do keep listening to Bad Nostalgia. Do keep tweeting us. Do keep listening out for all the episodes. Catch them on iTunes and Podomatic. We've got 20 hours worth. Work your way through them all. Binge them and contact us. See you soon. I've been Lewis Charlesworth. I love you.
I've been Pete Phillipson. Ta-ta.
Take care.